Let's read again in Psalm 61. Psalm 61 and verse 2. Psalm 61, verse 2. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee when my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Last year I was asked to write a book on teen anxiety. And it was a subject that immediately interested me because of the epidemic of teen anxiety that we find in our society today, and having met so many young people who do suffer in this way so much. And so started reading and researching and listening to people. And little did I think that this year I would experience anxiety and overwhelm in a way that I had never done before in my life. So a subject that started out as theoretical and for others became very practical and personal. It drove me into the Bible to find help, spiritual help, in these times of weakness and need. And just very recently, this Psalm 61, particularly this verse, it was greatly blessed to me. And I wanted to share some of what God had taught me through this part of his word to show you the power of God's word, to hopefully give you resources yourself if you struggle in this way, or to help you help others who do suffer in this way. I think the first thing to notice here is the image of overwhelm that the psalmist uses. It's fascinating when you start looking through the Bible how much God uses imagery to counsel us. You think even of that well-known passage in Matthew 6, similarly dealing with anxiety, and God points us to images in nature, the birds of the air, the flower of the fields, and many other examples. And this is one of that, one, another example of that image therapy that God uses. He doesn't just give us like statements of truth, facts, philosophy, theory. He gives us pictures, because he's made us in such a way that pictures make much bigger impressions, much more lasting impressions on us than bare words. Somebody said recently, a well-stocked and fertile imagination is essential for spiritual strength. Without a good stock of metaphors or word pictures and an active imagination, our prayers are crippled and reduced to flattened, formulaic expressions without much power. And so we're very thankful when God provides us with pictures, with image therapy, as he does here. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. And as we'll see, there are quite a number of images, even just in these few lines. The first image we see here is of overwhelm. And given the context of rock, it's probably speaking of somebody with a sense that they are drowning. They're in a sea, they're in a deep water. The waves are massive, towering above them, about to overwhelm and submerge and plunge them into the depths. There's probably a sense of choking, struggling to breathe. They're already taking in water. They are drowning, in other words. If any of you have ever come close to drowning, as I did as a young boy, you'll never forget it for as long as you live. It truly is an overwhelming experience, terrifying experience, a helpless experience. And you just get weaker and weaker as you go down and down, and the surface of the water gets further and further away, and your lungs fill up more and more with water, and you feel there is nothing left in you. So there's a very vivid image here, but it's not the only image. In the midst of this overwhelming scene, there is a rock that is higher than the waves, higher than what is threatening to submerge us and plunge us into the darkness. A rock that is higher than I. And it's a very memorable picture of someone who's going down, 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 and maybe with the last look, they look up, and where before they looked up and all they saw was more water, nothing on the surface to help. They see a great rock, massive, strong, that is higher, not just than ourselves, but higher than the highest wave. And you know, if I could get to that, I will be safe, but I have no strength. I can't swim there. I can't pull myself up there. Even if I could get to the bottom of the rock, I can't get up. And so we have this prayer, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. A very vivid picture of deep distress, of guaranteed safety, and a cry that is going from the one to the other. Lead me, help. Well, I'm sure as you hear that image, you perhaps begin to think of your own life. We want to think for a moment or two about what would cause such an experience in our lives. What are the causes of overwhelm? Well, there are a number of sources that can overwhelm us. You think, for example, of just the world that we live in. We are exposed through the media to innumerable tragedies, wars, disasters, terrorism, murders, shootings. Every day, from one part of the world or another, vivid stories and pictures are brought into our lives that create a sense of overwhelming danger and darkness for us, that make our world seem such a scary place. But we don't need to look as far as the world. Sometimes just our own situation. It may be our work, the multiple responsibilities that we are facing, one after another after another. Nothing ever seems to be cut. Just more and more seems to be piled up on top of us when we're already maybe at breaking point. Or maybe it's trouble at work. Maybe the company we work with or the organization is sinking financially or organizationally, or relational conflicts there are creating such a sense of overwhelm. And it just seems so unsolvable and unfixable. Or perhaps you're at school and you're facing exam after exam, test after test, assignment after assignment, and then sports are added on top of that, and then voluntary activities and your work and trying to keep friendships going, all the additional building blocks of life as you begin to think of, I need to plan for my future, I need to decide what I'm going to do with my life. And you see all the challenges ahead of you, and maybe you fail the odd subject. You don't get the grades you need for your dreams to be fulfilled, and, And yet you can't find any more time. You can't find space in your schedule. And now it's affecting your sleep and your health, and your mind's just swimming. Indeed, you feel your mind and heart is drowning and being overwhelmed. Or maybe it can even be church matters. Just so much to do, maybe in your own particular responsibility or ministry, or maybe it's just church on top of everything else. Or maybe you're in the midst of a church conflict with people within the church, maybe, or maybe you're in conflict with people about the kind of church you go to. Family troubles, family disagreements, family disapprovals that seem to come into every aspect of these relationships. And then there are just family troubles. Your children that you had set out so clearly, you've parented so well, they're beginning to rebel and go astray and disobey and go down paths that you would never recommend. You've urged them and warned them about, but there's nothing you can do, it feels. They're on a track, and no matter what you've done, nothing seems to have helped. You're overwhelmed with these children that you poured so much into, so much time, so much energy, so much affection, and now you get enmity and hostility and hatred and opposition in response. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to listen to you. They're gone. If not physically, they're gone mentally and emotionally and relationally. And it's overwhelming. Or perhaps it's illness in your family. You're maybe looking after an elderly, a senior member of your family, or maybe someone with special needs, and you can do this for a week or a month or two, but eventually it all builds up, and the mountains of waves just seem like never ending. It's one wave after another, after another, after another. Or perhaps it's friend drama that you can't seem to find someone you can really trust, and you maybe attach yourself to someone and you invest in that person, and you even love that person, and then they turn against you. And you go to school and you know you're going into drama. You come home and then the drama comes home with you through your phone and through social media and through texting, through messages you get and messages you don't get, through events you're not invited to, through friendships that you're excluded from. And all your hopes and all that you'd invested just seems to be pointless. You hear nasty things said about you that you can't fix. Misrepresentations, false accusations. And you know, any one of these things would overwhelm you. Sometimes it's one after another, and you think, I've got all of these in my life. I'm sunk to the bottom of the ocean. There can be spiritual overwhelm, temptations, pulling, attracting, pushing, forcing you feel. You're being put down a course that you just don't seem able to stop. Or you're perhaps in sin. It's not just temptation. You've fallen. And you've fallen deep, and you've fallen badly, and you cannot get up. And you, in fact, you find yourself falling now again and again, even more easily than before, now that you've caved once. And you're ashamed, and you're afraid, and you're guilty, and you're disappointed in yourself, and you're overwhelmed with who you are and what you have done, what this means for you. You think, there is no hope. Maybe even you thought you were a Christian and you've fallen into dreadful sins. You think, I could never have been a Christian then. How could I be if I could do such things and be such things? Or maybe it's the spiritual burden for your loved ones. The prayers and the cries and the tears just don't seem to have been answered. And down you go. Up go the waves. It might be physical illness, disease, or just aging. And you worry about how you will provide for yourself and even your loved ones as you age. And you don't have much in that 401k. You don't have anything invested. What lies ahead? Maybe it's mental and emotional overwhelm. Just your mind is confused. Maybe your emotions are depressed. You have non-stop anxiety and fear and perplexity. You can't stop your mind going round and round and round. You can't sort of get it out of this rut it's in. It's with you when you're awake. It's with you when you're trying to sleep. It's with you when you wake up in the morning. It just seems to be an obsessional, compulsive pattern of thinking. Maybe you've suffered injustice, and that's probably what David was particularly speaking about here. It's thought to have been written when Absalom, his son, had thrown him off the throne, and he had to run away into the furthest parts of the kingdom, even outside of the kingdom, to escape the threat of Absalom. He'd been wrongfully accused. He'd been unjustly deprived of his throne. He's seeing the wicked flourish, and he's seeing the innocent suffer. This is incredibly painful at times, isn't it? Maybe it's memories of abuse that cause a kind of post-traumatic stress disorder in your life. Memories you maybe thought were long buried, long forgotten. You'd go over them and then they come back, maybe with a trigger here and there. Maybe if you've served in the military or in emergency services, there are things that you can't get out of your mind and you wish you could because it's so overwhelming. It drowns you in a sea of pain and maybe even regret. So many causes of overwhelm, aren't there? And what are the effects of this upon us? Well, it affects us mentally. Obviously, we can't stop thinking about some of these things. Or eventually, maybe it gets to the point where you can't actually think. You just feel blank and zoned out, like you've given up, more or less. You've so exhausted your mind and your heart and trying to think over these things, trying to find solutions. Nothing's there, and you're left just with no reserves. There's nothing left to give. You can't decide anything. You can't do anything. You lack resolution. You can't rejoice. You can't hope. You can't pray. You can't cope. You say, I can't go on any longer. You're weak. You're anxious. You're fearful. You're depressed. And in the midst of this, worst of all, you cannot find God. This is the psalmist here. Notice what he says. Hear my cry, O God. Attend to my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry to you. He's basically, again, another image here. He's imagining this whole earth, and he's imagining God somewhere, but he is like the furthest he could possibly be from God. He's on the end or the edge of the earth. It's like he's on the lip of falling off the earth into a deep abyss. God is way over there and I am way over there. We couldn't be further apart. I cry, but like, where is he? There's no nearness. There's no sense of his presence. There's no help. The promises don't seem to have any power. Feel abandoned and forsaken, left in my greatest need. That's the experience, isn't it, of overwhelm at its worst. So how should we react to this? These are the images of overwhelm, the causes of overwhelm and the experience of overwhelm. How do we react to this? Well, there are wrong ways to react to this, and I'm sure many of us have passed through these reactions at various points. One reaction might be anger. Maybe especially in men, this is a typical reaction when we are overwhelmed. We lash out. We take it out on other people, even those closest to us, even upon God himself. Or maybe our reaction is just give up. Give in and give up. Just what's the point? I'm going to give up on life. I'm going to give up on people. I'm going to give up on God. I'm going to give up on myself. Just collapse in a heap. No point in praying anymore. No point in reading my Bible anymore. No point in trying to believe anymore. It's over. The end. Or perhaps you resort to determination. You're going to discipline yourself. You're going to force yourself. Just keep on pushing on, pushing on, pushing on, regardless of circumstances, regardless of personal pain, regardless of God. I'm just going to keep on going. I'm going to put my head down into the wind, against the tide, and I'm just going to keep on as hard as I can, pushing, 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 fighting, fighting, fighting. Not admitting my helplessness, not admitting my weakness, not crying to God or to anyone else for help. I can do this. I've got this. I've always done it in the past. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to keep going, keep going, keep going. Or maybe you try and distract yourself. You find other things to do. Just ignore all the trouble. Just like go into denial. And just distract yourself maybe on Facebook or Instagram or social media or some kind of leisure pursuit or hobby. Just something to block it out. Maybe self-medicating with alcohol or prescription drugs or even illegal drugs. Some way of just stifling the pain but not dealing with it. But the psalmist tells us how we should react. He gives us the pattern here. Prayer. Crying out prayer. Hear my cry. O God, attend to my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee. What is this prayer? It's this. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. Let's look at this rock that the psalmist gives us as our refuge from overwhelm. A refuge from overwhelm. He says, this rock is higher than I am. What a relief. Now, in these days, a high place, a high rock, was actually the ultimate weapon in military warfare. You know, today most of warfare is really based around who's got the biggest weapons. But in these days, it was really based around who's got the biggest mountain. The weapons were very primitive. And the best advantage you could get as a general or a soldier was to find the highest ground. That was your AK-47, as it were. That was your biggest asset, to get high ground. Why? Well, obviously, especially if it's rocky, there's protection there. There's also the inaccessibility of it, especially if it's high. It's a much better way of keeping the enemy from you. But it also gave you a much better perspective. And maybe that above all, it lifted you up. It was like your drone in modern warfare. It lifted you higher than the battlefield and it enabled you to look down and see things from a much better perspective. It would enable you to see where people were, where the battle was raging, where there were problems, but see it in the big picture. So you're not just down in ground level or even under in the sea. Now you're above and looking down, not down and looking up. And this is what the psalmist says. I'm looking to a rock that is inaccessible to the enemy, a rock that is strong and defensive and protective, a rock that enables me to prepare better for the hours and the days ahead, and a rock that gives me better perspective on myself and on everything else in my world. So who is this? It's Christ, isn't it? He is the rock of ages. He is the one that is inaccessible to the enemy. He is the one who is higher than we are. He is the one who protects. He is the one through whom we get a much better perspective on life, even on all the things that are overwhelming us. He is the one that can lift us up higher than where we are today. The psalmist here is praying to Christ to be lifted up. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, the rock of Christ's steady, stable, unchanging love, the rock of Christ's steady, stable, covenant mercies. It's interesting, David and later the prophets speak of the covenant that God made with David as the sure mercies of David. This was not someone or something that was subject to the whims of others. It wasn't unpredictable. You didn't know what reaction you were going to get if you went to Christ one day compared to the next. Someone who was steady and true and loyal, who wouldn't turn against you, who wouldn't act against you. And a rock that had been through his own battles, a tested rock that had been overwhelmed in ways that even we have never known. You read these messianic psalms like Psalm 22 and especially Psalm 69. It speaks prophetically of Christ sinking into the deepest waters, the darkest waters of suffering, overwhelmed. Not just with the wrath of people, but with the wrath of God. Made to fear, made to know anxiety, though sinlessly, but made to know it in ways we have never known it. Sunk into this sense of forsakenness and abandonment and loneliness. But eventually, after every wave had done its worst to him, he was raised up higher than he ever was before, given a name that is above every name. All power in heaven and in earth given to him. This is the rock that is higher than we are. And isn't the prayer interesting? He sees the rock. He sees how strong and steady and high it is. He knows that's the place to go. What does he say? He says, lead me. Lead me. It's an interesting prayer because he's got this sense of helplessness. It's not saying, I'm going to get up there. Just give me a moment or two. Give me a bit more time and I'll like clamber my way up here and eventually get to that. No, that's not in his vocabulary. It's not, I've got this, I'll do this. He's not doing this in his own strength. He sees, I need divine power. I need a divine intervention. I'm not going to straighten out my thoughts and my feelings and my situation myself. He says, lead me. And notice, it's not lift me or carry me. That's intriguing, isn't it? Because lift and carry means that God's going to do everything. When someone's lifted and carried, they are totally passive and inactive. And the one doing the carrying is the one who's active. But leadership is different. A good leader is not someone who does everything for everyone. A good leader is someone who enables people to do what they could not do before. He empowers. That's why I believe this is the verb used here, lead. It's saying, I cannot do this myself. I'm dependent on the Lord, but also recognizing there has to be a human response. There's some measure of human responsibility involved here. He knows he's not going to do it all himself, but he's looking to God to empower and enable him to do what he cannot do on his own. That's a good leader, because then someone is trained and someone is advanced. They're not just left where they were before. I was reading about a man who lived near a very rocky coast. And it was in the 1800s, there were many boats that were smashed on the rocks of this coast when it was stormy weather. And they used to find many of the drowned sailors on the rocks in this particular place. And so this man decided he would try and fix this going forward. He knew that there was a big cave further up the cliff face. And what he thought was these men were trying to get to that, but they couldn't make it with the slippy rocks. And so he carved steps in the rocks, big steps, over many years. He carved these steps, even put supports, pillars on the way up. And as a result, many sailors were saved in the years ahead. They not only saw this cave, this place of refuge high up, they were given helps to get there for their hands and their feet. And that's the kind of picture that we have here. It's as Solomon said in his Song of Solomon, draw me and we will run after you. Lead me and we will follow. Provide the helps and we will use the helps to get out of overwhelm. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. How does God do this? How does God lead? Well, I think the first way is by giving prayer, which is what we have here. Attend to my prayer. This is already, as it were, the psalmist on the first step of the rock. When God gives prayer, that means he is answering us. He is beginning to lead us to the rock that is higher than I. This should be an encouragement to you. If you find prayer forming in the midst of your overwhelm, know this, God is giving you that prayer. He's carving the first step. But notice, secondly, he gives new resolutions. He strengthens our will. Notice verse 2. From the end of the earth will I cry. I will cry. Even though I'm away over there and God is away over there, and like it's as if it's as far as east is from the west, I will cry. He says, verse 4, I will abide in thy tabernacle forever. I will trust in the covert of your wings. Verse 8, I will sing praise. Notice, God is giving him a stronger will. That will that was so weak, that will that was so overwhelmed, that will that thought it would never will anything again. He says, I'm strengthening it. So again, if you find this, it's like the second step on the rock. God is at work in your life. If he's giving you new determination, new will, and if he's not asked for it, as part of that prayer on the first step, say, Lord, give me wills that will get me to the second step. Give me new resolve, new determination. He gives pictures, images, not just the rock. Look at verse 3. You've been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in your tabernacle or tent forever. I will trust in the cover of your wings. It's like image after image, picture after picture is piling into his mind. It's like a movie of images, one after the other, that is coming in front of his mind to stir up that imagination. Images that will strengthen him spiritually. Not given a systematic theology. He's given an art lesson, really. He's given pictures to look at. He says, come into this gallery and look at me. I am a tower. There's another. I'm a shelter. There's another. I'm a bird with big wings to put over you. Use these pictures that God has given you to get you up another step. And then he reminds of vows, previous promises made. Notice he says in verse 5, for you, O God, have heard my vows. And then at the end of verse 8, I will daily perform my vows. So God is reminding him of vows made, maybe at baptism, maybe the vow we make each time we sit at the sacrament of the Lord's Supper, the rededication of ourselves to him. Or maybe vows and promises of a spiritual nature we've made on other occasions. God brings them back to our minds and says, come on, you've made these promises, you've made these commitments, you've dedicated yourself. Remind yourself of these and use them to strengthen you. Think of Pastor McLeod's new little booklet on improving our baptism, using our baptismal vows. The vows that were made for us, but then that we take on ourselves. Then he raises our minds to Christ's kingdom. That's the fifth step. You notice in verse 6, you will prolong the king's life and his years as many generations. He shall abide before God forever. Oh, prepare mercy and truth which may preserve him. Now, David knew his kingship was a prophetic picture of Christ's coming kingship. And here he, as it were, gets above the everyday ups and downs of his own monarchy, his own kingship, which has gone up and now it's way down. But he says, I've got to raise my mind above that. I've got to get to what this is all about, which is not me. It's Christ. It's not my kingdom. It's Christ's kingdom. And so he raises his mind. This king's life is going to be prolonged. His years as many generations. He's thinking of an eternal king. He will abide before God forever. His kingdom will never be moved. He will never be thrown off his throne. Mercy and truth will preserve him forever. He raises his mind to Christ. And so in this prayer, he's praying to Christ. And he's praying for Christ. And this was also a prayer prayed by Christ. When he came to this earth, threatened with his own overwhelm, he resorted to these truths as well. And then the sixth and final step that gets us to the pinnacle of safety, he produces praise. So will I sing praise to your name forever. So from this pitiful, powerless situation, he's raised step by step, led step by step, enabled and empowered step by step to eventually get to that point where he praises God. What a change, what a transformation, what an answer to prayer. Now, there's no indication how long this took. We read this in like 2 minutes. It likely did not take 2 minutes. This is a battle. If any of you have been through what I've been through in recent months in terms of that overwhelm, you'll know this can take days and weeks even to even get to that pinnacle for a second before you slither back down again. And it's just a battle, using the steps, using the means, using the leadership of Christ, using all that he has provided to keep clambering up by his grace, hoping eventually these points in the pinnacle will last a bit longer than a second or two. that they'll give you more than just an hour or two of sleep, but even give you 6 or 7 or, miracle of miracles, even 8 hours of sleep. This is a battle. Some of you, it's a lifelong battle. Some of us, it's just a few months, a little taste. But however long it goes on, here are the steps that God gives us to deliver our hearts from overwhelm. Oh, lead us, Lord, to the rock that is higher than I. Amen. Let's pray.